Office, Consumer Protection Division, to go after them. So we give another arm of the state agency, which is used to doing that type of consumer fraud. The second thing it does is it gives a private right of action for that person who happened to have been defrauded to go after them. Both provides for attorney fees, it provides for punitive damages. It's a pretty severe statute. I know I was the chief counsel of the Consumer Protection Division in the Department of Justice back in 1977.
There was Jones.
Sure. Did I hear you say that if you find something that has been stolen and pawned, that that you can go claim that, or the police can, and the pawn broker then has to stand the cost of it himself?
Yes.
Well, isn't that different than we discussed yesterday? It was
mm-hmm.
a thought in
it's
mind
different
that you have to go pay for it in order to get it back.
Yeah, I checked out what I thought was a pawn shop, and wasn't. Yesterday I found out they were unlicensed, and they called themselves a jewelry buyer.
Mm-hmm.
and it said, put in the phone book, and it says, fast cash, you know. And anyway, the police told me that once their case was settled, then we would have to pay the shop for the items. Now, maybe it's different with pawnbrokers.
Yeah, I know in Portland, they give up the merchandise. They're out.
Is that right?
Yeah. If they have mm-hmm. taken it in and it's not, it's stolen property, it's basically their liability.
Well, then it would be up to the pawnbroker to purchase it or loan money on it with that in mind.
Definitely.
You know, that they got to make a lot of profit someplace along the line in order to pay for giving that back
right.
if they're caught or whatever. Of course, they're not doing anything illegal. But the people that stole it.
They're doing something illegal if they know it's stolen.
Well,
right.
Sure, but they wouldn't buy it if it were that way, not a legitimate one.
Mr. Chairperson, Representative Jones, the pawn shops in Portland, I know, go through, again, the procedure for Senator Wire's benefit. They fill out that form that's handed every day to the police. It has a description of the item, a description of the person, everything. And that is a tremendous benefit. In fact, in the Labor Committee, the Portland Police testified with us that they wanted to retain the state regulation. In subsequent discussions with the department, we tried to come up with a way for them to get out of the nightmare, basically, of going after the secondhand shop. Is there another state agency that may be better off doing that, still retaining the uniform state regulation and policing of the pawn shop itself, but going after the secondhand shop? Perhaps through a more effective means.
Now, this is real good information that changes mm-hmm. that a heck of a lot. What we were working on yesterday or staggering around yesterday.
It clears it up a bit. But the point, you would support the basically unofficial decision of the subcommittee to not repeal
right.
the statutes and prefer the regulation. Now, the department testified that they collect about $7,000 income from a $350 annual license fee, and they say that with the complaint investigation that it ends up costing them about $14,000, so we suggested a doubling of the fee.
Now, just by way of clarification, was that, Mr. Chairman, was that a complaint investigation of licensed pawnbrokers or complaint investigation of secondhand shops that were acting as licensed?
Come forward. Sit there with Paul and your Paul and Paul.
Paul Arntzen, Administrator of Financial Institutions Division. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, to answer Mr. Romaine's question, it was those additional expenses were to investigate complaints primarily from licensees mm-hmm. about others who were unlicensed.
Right. So what that is, if you put in the consumer protection law a provision that allows for the Attorney General's office to go after it, the cost to the department does not exist at that point. So there is really no reason to raise the license fee because your investigative costs aren't there at that point.
We've got Chapter 646 in this bill. We could do that. And then we could also double your fees too. Be okay?
I'm giving you all these wonderful suggestions and you want to
still want to do that, but yeah, well, because your folks are generating the complaints, which is fine. We want them to do that. And then also we'd have an interim study to put it in the right place. There was some pressure on us from Mr. Long to just, I mean, he had a number of suggestions and they were coming very fast, and we thought, well, this is sort of serious and maybe people should look at it. In the meantime, we'd like to leave the laws where they are. And so, Representative Jones.
Yeah, you know, Mr. Romaine here has kind of got to me a little bit here, I think. I hate to lay it on a group of people, whatever you want to call them, for the good job they're doing, and double their fee when we're not getting to the people that we're trying to get to.
But they're helping us to get to those people. And do you think there'd be much of an objection to a fee increase in order to maintain the complaint investigation function, which is the part Commerce was trying to shake loose of, or Financial Institutions Division?
Well, I guess I need to get some clarification from Paul. The cost, my understanding, the cost isn't responding to the legitimate pawnbroker who says XYZ shop is acting as a pawnbroker and they're not licensed. Right. It's actually sending people out or telephoning or whatever to investigate that secondhand shop.
Correct.
So all we are doing is reporting. If you shift over to consumer protection statutes, then what you've done is shifted that cost of going out and investigating that secondhand shop over to the Attorney General's office. But you don't have it in the department.
So Mr. Chairman, though, if the pawnbrokers don't give them that information, then there's nothing to investigate.
They wouldn't need to continue to do that.
They've reported that there's something wrong over there, and then now we're asking them to pay to go do that.
Well, maybe not, Mr. Aronson.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, what I would suggest as a potential compromise, and I agree with Mr. Romaine, mm-hmm. is that, and I have contended to Mr. Romaine and to others in the industry that the actual time going in, looking at the books and making decisions about whether the setup fee is correct and all those issues, while $30 an hour doesn't cover that cost, to be candid with you, we could probably live with that. The part that becomes difficult is, as we've said apparently, you know, repeatedly, is that it's the additional investigative time that's required, the Attorney General fees to go after civil penalties and do other things. If that portion of that statute could be shifted, as Mr. Romaine suggests, to consumer protection, so the pawnbroker, I don't want to discourage them reporting illegal operations. I think they're to be commended for that.
Mr. Weeks, can the you handled the budget for the Department of Justice, correct?
That's right.
Can we stick them with this small $7,000 complaint item and think they can absorb it in their budget?
Mr. Chairman, you could probably place with them any responsibility that you wanted to, but you can bet that the department will come back to you and ask for money to support it. I doubt that we would support their request to you. There's another question here, though, and that's the extent to which the folks you've got here in front of you can go ahead and handle this cost without a fee increase. The fee increase is not set in statute. It's not approved by any legislative review agency. It's set by the supervisor of the banking industry, and so, or whoever takes his or her place in the future. So it may be that in their judgment they can continue doing this. If you want to do an interim study as opposed to just shifting the cost from banking to justice or some other agency and see if there are more statutes than just 646 or more ways that you want to work on this problem. I guess I would suggest to you that the costs are not such that the department couldn't mm-hmm. handle it, at least long enough for you to do some work on it.
Especially if they wanted this bill. Senator Hannon.
Mr. Chairman, I think that would be a concern that I have, is it doesn't do any good really to go shifting something, because the people that are going to be investigating are unlicensed and unregulated. And so they're really not doing that much in violation of the law, because they pretty much have an open check to do the type of activities they've been involved with. This morning I spoke with the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he's agreed to certainly make this a high priority issue to study during the interim and then come back. And I think what we perhaps should do is look at how can we maintain this for the next biennium until the next session.
Let's leave it alone.
Yeah.
So what we'll do then is we'll amend this bill by taking out the repealers of the Chapter 726, leave it up to financial institutions working with the pawnbrokers. If they need a fee increase or not, they can decide amongst themselves. Go ahead, carry the program and leave the statutes in the books, and we'll have an interim study, and we'll try to catch some of these people who have made Mr. Romaine and Senator Hannon and myself angry by ending up being fences. How's that sound?
Mr. Chairman, it does sound good. I do. The possibilities with the consumer protection statute are very real. I doubt if it's going to be that much of an additional burden to the Justice Department to do it, but having been there myself in that exact position, but it's something that it's up to you whether you want to present.
Mr. Chairman, having sat through the Justice Department hearings and heard from the Attorney General how tightly they have been screwed down year after year, I think if you were in your former position, you might feel differently. But I'm sure that they
change
would
like this would be an invitation
would
be,
it's
to
it's an
the
invitation for complaints
and
to your bill. It's also an invitation for the Attorney General to return. And
it's also kind of out of the range of a Ways and Means Subcommittee, probably.
Probably. I would think that the Attorney General would argue, too, that if you're going to look at this, don't just race in here and drop this responsibility on me. Let's figure out the long-term comprehensive solution to the problem.
Okay. So there we are.
Thank you
very much for coming by.
Thank you.
Okay. So is there anybody else that ever wants to testify on House Bill 3381? If not, then I'll close the public hearing and open a work session on the same bill. Mr. Weeks, how do we get out of these woods?
Mr. Chairman, I think probably what would be best with your agreement is to go ahead and continue with the department's presentation of the budget material in the blue book. They can run through that, and then we can try to take some logical steps when they've finished with their budget presentation.
Okay. That's when we cut the budget, right? I'm getting anxious.
It's one of the options, Mr. Chairman.
This is the third day we haven't done any cutting yet.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Joan Cater, and I'm the fiscal officer in the Department of Commerce. And with me is Bob Miller, who's deputy administrator of the insurance division. What we thought we could do is to go through this blue book that we passed out yesterday, and I have a couple extra copies if you need them. And talk about what the size of the budget for the new Department of Insurance and Finance would look like. And we could, when we get to the part on the insurance division, then Mr. Miller could talk about the budget request for the insurance division. Because when you heard the rest of the Department of Commerce, you hadn't heard financial institutions and insurance
that's
yet.
Correct.
So we could do that now.
Fine.
How this book is put together, there are several different tabs, and the information in the beginning is general information, and then it gets more detailed as you go through the tabs. So if you look under tab A, towards the bottom of the page, you can see that the total budget for the new department would be $58 million and 662 employees. And you can see the different components that's made up there. On the next page, we talk about the changes to the governor's printed budget, and these are in summary numbers. When we proposed a budget for the new department, we created an office of the director for the new department, and that has seven positions in it and an $800,000 cost. We've also deleted eight positions from the workers' comp director's office as a cost saving measure.
I was trying to find that on the organization chart, this office of the director. Instead, I find an administrative support division. Is that the same thing?
See, two pages back, you have the organization chart there, and it says the director and deputy.
Uh-huh.
And that's
$800,000 there. And then also this administrative support division too, mm-hmm. on top of it already. I thought we were going to save money with this move. That's what newspapers told me.
If you go through the list of adjustments, you can see that there's a total cost reduction of $1.5 million. But But the very next line, we're saying that there's legislation coming down the road for insurance division that has a potential cost of $1 million, which would leave about $500,000 left in savings. Now, it could be that not all of this legislation would pass that.
Like Senate Bill 323, heck, that it took them three times in the Senate, Senator Wires, is that right, to pass that? Okay. Go ahead.
We wanted to identify all the potential costs that we could, though, so that you would see the, you know, the total picture.
Mr. Chairman, in your proposed structure here, it shows accident prevention division. Yesterday, I thought we were getting an overview and said that would be a separate, distinct function and would not be part of this consolidated effort.
It's a separate division within this department. Right now, it's part of workers' comp department. And workers' comp department becomes a division, and then we separate out accident prevention division, so it's on an equal status with the workers' comp, the rest of the workers' comp program. So it's part of this department, but it has a division status rather than being a program within another division.
I see, but it'll still be part of the umbrella then of this department.
Right.
Okay.
Now, this administrative support division, is it kind of like ASSD
mm-hmm.
commerce?
Mm-hmm. And we're proposing no changes to that budget.
The computer and all that?
There
was a bunch of computer money that we had unscheduled, I think, pending right. data processing review by legislature and exec.
In the
is
Department of Commerce
yeah,
budget?
Uh-huh.
That need isn't there anymore with this reorganization because our units will go to commerce boards and divisions will go to different homes. Now they'll have data processing needs, but it will be different than that original request.
Oh, good. Then we saved a lot of money and we don't have to buy a new computer.
That's right.
That's right. Okay.
There's another bill, as you know, that disperses the rest of the Department of Commerce, and in that, the ASSD unit within Department of Commerce, which was, I think it was $3.1 million budget, we're requesting only an expenditure limitation of $300,000 to continue that unit for a maximum of 3 months. But some of the positions that were in there, we had to transfer out to the different boards and divisions that are going to different homes because, you know, cashiering yeah. functions have to continue, and some of those things do.
So we may even get that bill if it ever gets out of Senator Hill's committee.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I think Ybor will probably have to. Maybe, unless Senator Hill moves rapidly.
We're showing that there would be $489,000 of savings in the insurance division from the reorganization. We're showing savings in the financial institutions division from the. That's a result.
That was $1 million
of the
we talked about yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah, and so that reduction would probably have to occur whether or not this new department is created. Yeah. But there's an additional $328,000 of savings within financial institutions, and that's a deletion of a couple of positions, and the administrative services charges that. Was in a line item, S&S item, in the Department of Commerce budget.
Mr. Chairman.
Turn ahead.
If you show a reduction in what is going to be required there, how are we going to resolve the $1 million deficit that the financial services section currently is facing?
Budget cut. It's the cuts that we went through yesterday, the reduction of, what, 11 positions, as I recall?
And that's how we achieve
right.
this.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's still going to be a cash flow problem, as was addressed by Mr. Long yesterday.
Even with these severe reductions, there is likely a cash flow problem because they receive most of their revenue at one time during the year. And it's a timing of the cash flow that causes the problem. They may have to borrow for a couple of months, and then their revenue comes in and they're okay again. What we wouldn't allow is for, in any one biennium, for a program to spend any more than the revenue that comes in. Revenues would always have to equal or exceed expenditures within a biennium, but at any point, any month within one biennium, there could be a cash flow problem in Financial Institutions Division.
Does that appear to be the only one that's going to have a cash flow problem of all the different consolidations?
Well, no, it isn't. Insurance Division also could have a cash flow problem. In the Insurance Division, they were planning on having a fee increase last fall, and the increase wasn't made. It was partly, well, at that time, the Insurance Division thought that they had the statutory authority to increase fees without going to Ways and Means or the Emergency Board. How they read the statute, they thought they had that authority. After the change in the administration and the new commissioner, insurance commissioner, came on board, he realized, yes, we need a fee increase. By that time, it was, I think, in late February, we thought we were going to be up in Ways and Means just momentarily. Mm-hmm. And we told them, Department of Commerce said, no, you do need to go to Ways and Means. Rather than go in at that point and tell you we needed a fee increase without having the total program laid out, we advised them to defer until we could get to Ways and Means. And unfortunately, because of the timing, it's late, and the Insurance Division could be within just a few thousand dollars cash at the end of the biennium. So they need a fee increase very badly, and what we were hoping for is that you could allow them to increase their fees effective upon passage of the bill, so we could even maybe get it before the end of the biennium.
I think the fee increase requires just approval by Ways and Means. That's my understanding.
Yeah, it says the Legislative Review Agency.
Yes, so that doesn't mean we have to have a bill passed. So it does mean you have to convince the subcommittee, and we have to convince our colleagues on the full committee.
Okay.
A few thousand, that's too bad. But the former director of the department, I guess, had put an across-the-board order out on all divisions to not ever ask for any fee increases, and so as we were waiting through the Department of Commerce, we ran into lots of problems where they'd run out of their ending balance. It's probably one of those, huh?
Bob, did you want to
speak? Mr. Chairman, the previous commissioner had determined, I think sometime in late 1985, that if the fee schedule continued as it was, we would overcollect by a great deal. And at that point, she unilaterally reduced fees at the Insurance Division. And so that's one of the reasons we're now ending up with a cash flow problem at the end of the biennium.
Okay. So you're kind of asking us to look at that problem separate and apart from increases that may or may not occur depending on the passage of certain legislation. Reverend Jones.
Now, if we do that, then the legislation passes that has fees in them also.
I don't know. Do they?
No.
I mean, did they affect these then? Does the legislation affect the
yes. The different pieces of legislation that's out there could amount to $1 million worth of additional expenditures.
Well, then where do you get that?
Well,
or would you be asking for those? Would you come to the board then and ask for authority to collect those additional fees?
Our preference would be to request you to approve a fee level that's high enough to support this additional legislation, and then we would come back in and request the expenditure authority so that the division wouldn't have to raise fees twice in a row.
I don't think we'd do that.
This seems to have will attack kept all the time, but this is maybe one of the heavier ones. you kind of absorb here simply because $1 million worth of legislation that you passed the last day of the session.
There's lots and lots of insurance agents with phones in all of our districts.
The size of the fee increase, Mr. Chairman, is a $5 increase for original appointments and a $6 for appointment renewals.
Is Mr. Long explaining that? I notice he's on a speaking tour across the state. Is that one of the things he's going to be covering, you know?
I don't know, but I don't think that it is.
We get to explain. Okay. I'm sorry, I don't mean to distract you. First, I thought we were talking about an immediate need, and then you would have a fee increase to take care of that, but then you're saying, well, why don't you make it big enough to handle all of these bills that might pass? And I can understand not wanting to change the fees like a couple of times within months. But on the other hand, I don't think we ever go ahead and, before legislation passes, increase fees to meet some target that isn't established. So what can you live till the next e-board at all with what's left in your accounts?
Did you want to go ahead?
Or Representative Jones?
Well, just quickly, that would make a great endorsement. Just say, you just said, well, vote for this because we already got the money.
Another, it is a difficult dilemma, and it's unfortunate that at this point in time we're down this low in cash. What's unfortunate, it'll take months to build up an ending balance sufficient for cash flow. So our request is fees at the higher level immediately. It's possible, though, if you approved them at lower level, then we could come back later and address it again.
Mr. Chairman, at the current fee level, our projected ending balance now, I think, is in the neighborhood of around $1,500. We believe that coming out of the legislation, we think there are reasonable prospects that there will be substantial change, for instance, in the rate making and the rate hearing process. We want to be able to gear up to do that right away. We have a good prospect now of hiring an actuary. We think we have an individual who's committed. His salary is substantial. We will face an immediate cash flow going into the new biennium, and we want to be prepared to fulfill public expectations in terms of the way we process rate filings and rate hearings, and want to be able to respond quickly in the next biennium. And right now,
you weren't going to suggest the barbers and hairdressers.
I think you've disabused me of that idea. Well, Mr. Chairman, an immediate increase in the fees isn't going to resolve this problem because, as Jones pointed out, it's going to take 6, 8, maybe a year in terms of months in order to get them into a cash position. It seems like you'd be better served by not making any decision on a fee increase right now and waiting until your first emergency board when, A, you'll know what legislation has passed, and B, then you can come in and wrap up the legislation with the increase that's needed to continue the existing program all in the same package, as opposed to having a small increase now and another increase in 4 months, or an increase to cover programs that you haven't even legislated yet.
Yeah.
So if you were to do nothing and just wait till August or September, the problem doesn't seem to me to will have grown any. They're still going to have to borrow money. That's the purpose of some of these funds, being able to move money back and forth.
Well, Chairman, was the bank broke, they won't be able to borrow the money to finish out with.
No, they can't borrow from the banks. They're broke. Insurance is broke. Let's see. Workers comp. We don't want them. We don't want them in that fund. Well, maybe we're back to the barbers and hairdressers.
You won't, Mr. Chairman. You won't have them. Or they'll be off using their money in the health division.
See what a mistake you made when in the reorganization you forgot about money. Okay.
I think the analyst has sort of said what we're going to have to do. Unless there's, under current law, there is a different way in which it would be administered that you could tell me about that would justify.
Mr. Chairman, I think that Mr. Weeks' recommendation is very workable. The only drawback is that we have to pay interest on the money, so it's, you know, it would be nice to, we would still have to borrow. We have to borrow a little bit more with his recommendation. But it's a workable recommendation.
Who's going to loan you the money?
You can have loans from the state treasurer, or if this bill goes through and we can borrow money from one of the other operating units and then...
The last time we talked about it when we were in financial institutions, we didn't think the treasurer thought it was a good enough risk to take money out of him, so... But maybe it's changed now. Okay. Go ahead, then.
Speaking about revenue adjustments, we're showing that there's no change in the workers' compensation assessment projected due to the development of this new department. Now, if there's other pieces...